Okay, hello everybody. Good morning. Welcome to all of you who are obviously not on the Elat trip. There are a few people who are picked a good week to go to Elat. We're here left in Yerushalayim to brave the rain and perhaps even at the end of the week the snow. We'll see what happens with that. But I'd like to speak this week about a topic which does very much what I try to do in these shiurim, which is to combine a halakhic and hashkafic perspective on something that sometimes we take for granted or don't think too much about. And there are a few topics that relate to this. There's some beautiful material generally on rain and on snow, which I'm not going to go through this week. Maybe later in the winter or next year, we'll see how it goes. I would recommend there is a very beautiful shiur by Rabbi Adler, who usually speaks before me, that you can get off the YU Torah website on rain. I listened to his shiur. It was very, very inspiring and very lovely indeed. But I'm not going to speak about that specifically. I'd like to speak about the rainbow. This is not something, I'll be honest with you, I'd ever really given any thought to much before. You know, everybody knows there are rainbows every now and then, and there's a bracha that you say. If you remember the bracha, apparently the person who was speaking before me was just speaking exactly on that topic about the bracha on a rainbow. I didn't realize that. But let's have a look at this a little bit more deeply, and we'll see that there's a lot of material here. There was too much even for one share. I'm not going to give another share on this, but I had to cut it at 8 pages of Makoros. I could have gone on, but you'll be pleased to know that I didn't. So let's have a look first at the main Makorot. There are two places in Tanakh where rainbows appear. One is famous and one is less famous. Let's look at the famous one in number one. When Noah comes out of the Teva, together with his family and the animals, God enters into a brit. Number one. Vayomer Elokim el Noach. Ve'el banav ito lemor. So Noach and his sons were addressed by God. Vani hinani mekim et briti itchem. And I want you to focus on certain words. The word brit appears a lot. The word ot, a sign, a symbol. The word anan, a cloud. We'll see how this word is repeated again. Hinene mekim et briti etchem. I'm making a brit with you. Ve'et zarachem achreihem. And with all of your children, that's us. We are the B'nai Noach. We call ourselves B'nai Noach on Rosh Hashanah. Of course, we're also B'nai Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, but we're also B'nai Noach. Ve'et kol nefesh achaya asher etchem ba'of, u'baheima, u'bachol chai ta'aret etchem. Not just with you, but this brit is with the whole animal kingdom. We'll talk more about the animal kingdom next week, please God. Mikol yotzei ha'teva. Everyone who came out of the teva, l'chol chaya ta'aret. V'hakimoti et briti etchem. I am making this brit with you. V'lo yikaret kol basar od mimei hamabul. There will never be another destruction of all life from a flood. V'lo yeh od mabul l'shachet ha'aretz. There will be no more destruction that will wipe out the world. V'yem elokim zot od briti. This is the side of my brit. Asher ani notain, note the presence. Notain, I am now placing veini u'beinechem. Between me and you, ubein kol nefesh chaya, and between all the animals as well, asher etchem lezorot olam, forever and ever. This is a new brit, and this is a new sign, he says. And here's the sign. Et kashti, my bow, natati ba'anan. I have placed, note the past tense of that, not present tense, the os is new, but the rainbow, or the brit rather, is new, but the rainbow is old. Et kashti natati ba'anan. I placed my bow in the sky. This will be the sign of the covenant between me and the whole world. When the clouds begin to form al haaretz over the earth, and then you will see that the bow will appear in the sky. And I will remember this covenant. And there will never be another destruction of a flood of water. And when the bow is indeed in the sky, I will look at it, says God. And I will remember this promise. Between God and all the living things, it's stressed many times, it's all the living things are in the split. Zot ot habrit. This is the sign of the brit. Asher hakimoti beini ubein kol basar she'al ha'aretz. many times this is repeated, and why exactly there's so much repetition here I'm not getting into. This is not a shear on the documentary hypothesis and other such approaches to this. That's a completely different shear for a completely different time, and there are other very important reasons why there are many repetitions in this to stress the nature of this brit. But one thing is for sure, we see that there is a new brit, there is a sign, and that sign is the rainbow, and the rainbow appears in the clouds. And when God sees this, and when we see this, this is a reminder of the brit. That is the first well-known example of the rainbow. The second is much less well-known, comes at the end of the first chapter of Yechezkel. Yechezkel has this vision, the vision of the Merkava, of the chariot. The chariot being the mechanism whereby we as human beings understand that God is carried, as it were, in this world. That God interfaces with this world. The idea of the Merkava is that the rider on the chariot uses the chariot to connect with the ground. This is the way that the rider runs through across the ground. So too, in our symbolism, this is the way we perceive that God interfaces with the world. And therefore, Yechezkel has this vision of malachim of different types. And if you look in the Rambam, in the second chapter of Hilchos Yesodi HaTorah, he explains how the names of all these malachim, Chashmal, which we'll see in a minute, and Ofanim, and Chayot, and Ishim, how they fit into the taxonomy, if you like, of different levels of malach, and how that works, and how God interfaces. But Yechezkel, at the end of this vision, in the first chapter, says the following. I just picked it up from Pasuk 25. I could have started earlier, but I started here. Number two. Vayhi kol ma'al rukia. He says, now Yechezkel is saying, I heard a voice, there was a voice over the heavens, Asher al Roshan, which was over the heads of all these malachim, the Amdam, and when they were standing, Tarfena Kanfehem, they put down their wings, and they rested their wings, Uvima al Rakia, Asher al Roshan, over their heads, over the heavens, Tamar'e Evin Sapir. I could see this sapphire-like blue structure. Now, of course, we've come across that blue sapir, ma, said sapir before. Where have we seen that? In the Chumash itself, when the people have a vision of God, they see God, if you like, sitting on a sapphire throne. So that blue, remember that. The blue is very important. We'll come back to blue later. He sees this blue sapphire, demut kisei, a kind of throne, that al demut kisei, demut kamare adam, alav milamala. And over the throne, there was something that looked like a man, that I saw a vision of a human form. What else did I see? I saw chashmal. Don't know what that is. We, of course, use that word in modern Hebrew for electricity, although there was a great deal of opposition throughout the 20th century, at least the beginning, from the religious establishment to using that word. You can't use that word, they said. You can't take the word chashmal, which is a reference to a spiritual being, and use it for electricity. Who knows, first of all, whether it's even anything to do with it. And it's used inappropriately. In fact, if you look at the earlier tshuvas about electricity, they always call it elektrika. They will not use the word chashmal on principle. Now everyone's given in on that, basically, and chashmal is chashmal. But still, let's not forget that chashmal is something much more than chashmal. Kemare eish, beit la saviv, and there was a kind of fire around it. From the loins of this man down, okay, there was this fire. Sorry, that was above, and from the loins downwards, I saw another kind of fire, the noga la saviv. And this fire had a noga around it. It's all very esoteric stuff, obviously. What is a noga? Some kind of a halo. There was some kind of a halo around it. And what was that halo? What did it look like, says Yechezkel? Kemarei hakeshet. It looked like a rainbow. Asher yihyeh ba'anan b'yom hageshem, which appears in the cloudy skies on a rainy day. Kemarei hanoga saviv. That's what this halo looked like. It ran all around, like a rainbow around. Humarei demut kvod Hashem. And this whole picture was a picture that Yechezkel had of the kvod Hashem, of the glory of God. And when I saw it, I fell on my face. And I listened to the voice talking. He fell down in terror because the whole thing was just too much, and all of these visions caused him to fall on his face. At the end of that vision, he sees something like a halo of a rainbow type. By the way, there is such a thing in the physical world. He's obviously having a spiritual vision, but there is such a thing as a 22-degree halo, which appears as a circle, as a rainbow circle around the sun, as a pure circle around the sun. More about that kind of phenomenon later. But this is how he envisages this halo, as a rainbow structure. So these are the two places in Tanakh. Now, very interestingly, the first reference from Noach is something you would want to look at. We want to look at the rainbow because the rainbow represents for us a covenant with God. God has made a promise to us that the world will continue and will not be destroyed. This, if you like, is a very positive connotation. On the other hand, the rainbow of Yechezkel, you're a braver man than I if you want to look at that. Even Yechezkel Anavi was unable to take that. He collapsed on the ground. So you would really not want to look at that unless you absolutely had to. And that's reflected in the way that Chazal understood our relationship with rainbows. There are two Gemaras that relate to rainbows, and we'll see how they bring out that dichotomy between is it something you want to look at, Dafka, or is it something you don't. Look at number three. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Remember Yeshua ben Levi? He comes up later. He says the following, Haro'e Takeshes. If you see a rainbow, Ba'anan in the clouds, Sarich sheyipol al panav. Says the Gemara, you have to fall on your face, on the ground, if you see a rainbow. Shemar, and he brings a pasuk from Yechezkel, Kamari Akesh, Tashay, Yebanan, etc., etc. And he fell on his face. So the Gemara says, no, we won't do that. Light Allah b'marav. In the West, they criticized that approach. Maybe people used to do this. They used to fall on the ground, like Yeshua ben Levi says, when they saw rainbows. They don't do that, said the people in the West. Where is the West? Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Mishum de Mechzi Commander Sagila Kashke, it looks as though you're bowing down to the rainbow. And of course, that's the danger with Yechezkel's vision. He sees these images like a man, like a this, like a that. It begins to easily become mistaken for some kind of Avodah Zarah. Don't bow down. Aval Baruchi Vadai Mavarech. But you should make a brocha. That you should do. It's a good thing. My Mavarech, this is a Birkat HaShevach, a brocha of praise. What do you make? So the Gemara gives two opinions. The first it says is Baruch, which it always says Baruch means Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Zocher HaBrit. God remembers the Brit. That's it. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Zocher HaBrit. Finished. B'matnis HaTana, a brisa teaches another alternative. Rabbi Yishmael B'noshe Rabbi Yochanan Mebrucha on a different brocha. You say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Ne'eman B'brito, God is faithful to his promise, U'kayam B'mamaro, and fulfills his word. So there's two different versions of that bracha. Amar Rav Papa, and the Gemara does a good Jewish compromise and says, you know something? We'll say them both. Say both brachas together. Amar Rav Papa, Hilkach, Nemrinhu, Letravaihu. Let's say them both together. And the Gemara comes up with a composite bracha, which is, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Zocher HaBrit, which was the first version, V'ne'eman Bebrito, Umeka Ukayim B'mamara. Which is basically the bracha that we say today, which has all three elements, that God remembers the bris, and also is faithful in his bris, and fulfills his word. So what did the Gemara conclude? Don't fall on the floor in terror, but do make a bracha, Birkas HaShevach, like we make a bracha when we see the sea, when we see the thunder, see lightning, etc. Another Gemara in Chagiga seems to reflect a more concerned approach. See number four. Kol sheloi chas al kvoy kainam. Anyone who is not careful with the glory, with the honor of his maker, Ratui or Ra'ui, there's another Gersa here, Loi, Shaloi Bala Oilam. It should better have never been created. If you're going to be played fast and loose with Kvoit Hashem, you should never have been. Maihi, what are we talking about, says the Gemara? Rabbi Abba Omer, Da Mistakel Bakesha. Someone who is Mistakel. Now, what does Mistakel mean? Who stares. Someone who stares at the rainbow. That you can't do. That's called imposing on the kvod of Shamayim. Rav Yosef Amar, Rav Yosef says, Zeha oiva aver b'seita. It's someone who does averas on the quiet when nobody can see them. Hamistakel b'keshes. Why do we say you shouldn't stare at a rainbow? It certainly brings the same posik from Yechezkel, Kamari Hakeshes, etc., that Yechezkel fell on his face. And the Gemara concludes, Kol hamistakel b'shloshet dvarim. Anyone who stares at three things, einav kehot. His eyes or her eyes will begin to weaken, excuse me, and I don't think this means like you'll, you know, need to go to the optician, but it means that you'll begin to lose a certain insight and confuse certain things in the way that the distinctions between the world of the spirit, the world of the physicality, what are the things that if you look at, you will begin to lose this sight? The Keshet, the rainbow, the Nazi, the leader of the Jewish people. It doesn't mean that President Ruby Rivlin. It means the Nazi of the Beis Din, okay? Uba Kohanim. And that's very famous, of course, the idea that if you stare at the hands of the Kohanim, certainly when they were in the Mikdash, and they said the Shem HaMupurash, they said the actual explicit name of Hashem, and they didn't cover their hands, and they just put their hands in the air. And the Gemara says, Meitzit Min HaCharakim, the idea of God peeping between the cracks, which is a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, is this idea of the Shechina, if you like, appearing between the fingers of the Kohanim. That's not something you can look at. Now, today, of course, we're very far removed from that. Number one, the Duchening, they don't say the Shem HaFurash. Number two, they are not in the Beit HaMikdash. Number three, they cover their hands with a talus. Number four, people cover their heads with a talus. There's any number of reasons now why that's much less of a problem. Even though people are still particular, one person said to me once, they were told that if you look at the Kohanim's hands, you'll go blind, and if you look at them again after you've gone blind, then you'll die. Of course, there's a certain illogicality to that whole statement, but at the time they said it made an impact on them. But you shouldn't look at any of these things very closely. Okay, fine. So what does the Shulchan Aruch do with these two Gemaras? Because we have a problem. Gemara in Brocha says, oh, when you see a rainbow, look at the rainbow, make a Brocha, beautiful. The Gemara in Chagigah says, how dare you look at a rainbow? How can you look at a rainbow? Don't look at the rainbow. So how am I meant to make a Brocha if I can't look at the rainbow? On the one hand, I should look at it. On the other hand, I shouldn't. So the Shulchan Aruch basically resolves this, and he says, number five, Haraya Keshet, if you see a rainbow, Omer, what should you say? Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam, Zocheh Abrit, Ne'eman Bebritoi, there are others that say, V'ne'eman Bebritoi, which is what we say, V'kayam B'mamaroi, like the Gemara said. But then he adds, V'asu Lehistakel Bo B'yoteh. But don't stare too hard. Look at the rainbow, and don't stare. Make the bracha and don't stare. Indeed, this is what our practice is. We make that bracha. There is actually a very interesting Tosfos gives a slightly different bracha in number 7, which we don't say. I don't quite know if anyone still does say that, but the bracha in Tosfos is not the one we say, but it's Ne'eman v'britoi v'kayim b'shvuasoi v'zocheh habrit. It's really quite different. But I've never seen anyone make that bracha. I don't know exactly what the Teimanim or the Teimanim presumably got like the Rambam, but I think most people make the bracha that we have. So how do we resolve that tension? Look, but don't stare. This is not the only area in halacha where this comes up, because there is also a requirement in halacha that when you see a very beautiful woman, you should make a bracha. And the Gemara is a bit concerned with this particular halacha, because where exactly do I draw the line? By the way, it's a beautiful man as well. It's not just it's not a gender issue specifically. Look at this interesting Gemara number 8. Masib Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. There was a story of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Shehaya al gabi ma'ala b'har habayis. He was walking around Har Habayis or on the hill towards Har Habayis. This is after the Churban, so there was no Beis HaMikdash. Actually, it could have been the earlier Shimon ben Gamliel, so there could have still been a Beis HaMikdash. V'ra oved kachavim achat na'i b'yoseh. And he sees an exceptionally beautiful non-Jewish woman. Amar, and he immediately made a bracha. Ma rabu ma'asecha Hashem. How amazing that such things are in the world. Amazing. He made a bracha when he saw her. The Rabbi Akiva ra'eshes Turnus Rufus. This was definitely much later. Rabbi Akiva saw the wife of Turnus Rufus, which was his, if you like, arch enemy, Harosha. And it's a very intense reaction, this. What did he do? Ruck, he spat. Sachak, he laughed. Ubacha, and then he cried. He was a man of great emotion. So why did he do this? Why did he spit? Then he laughed. Then he cried. Rak he spat shehaita ba mitipa serucha, because he wanted to remind himself that this beautiful woman originally came from a putrid drop, meaning the lowly origins of humanity. And he spat, if you like, to remind himself of that. So hak he laughed. Why? That he the Megairi Benatibla, because he realized that one day she's going to leave Turnus Rufus, convert to Judaism, and marry him. Interesting. People don't often know that. People are often familiar with this idea of Rabbi Akiva's wife, Rachel, etc. Here is interesting. Apparently he married the wife of Turnus Rufus, eventually. So that he was happy about. Bachan, and he cried, why? The High Shupra, Bali Afra, that this beauty would one day be buried in the ground. It's a source of great sadness to him. Ya'amamar, and why do you do all of this? Because the Torah, because the Gemara brings, Haroi Briyas Tovas, if you see beautiful beings, Omer Baruch Shekacha Bara Ba'olamai, you have to make a bracha, that such things are in the world. So the Gemara now asked, Ulistakuli Mishari, really? You can go looking, staring at beautiful women to make brachas? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, what's going on here? Maitvi, don't we learn in a brisa, v'nishmat and he called avara, you must guard against all bad things, which means, shelo yistakel adam v'isha na'ev afilu pnuya. If you see a beautiful woman, and you're a man, presumably, do not look at her even if she's single. Because even if she's single and not married, her beauty will be a distraction. U'be'eshezish, and if it's a married woman, afilu m'cho'evet. Even if she's not so beautiful, you shouldn't look at her either. Okay? Don't look at women, says the Gemara. That's a general piece of good advice. So how did Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel do this? So the Gemara makes an interesting answer. He gives an interesting. He says, Keren Zavit Havi. It was round the corner. Rashi explains, look at Rashi the last line, Kashipain li yamin or lismo, likanis mi mavo la mavoi, when you go either left or right, from a, there's a 90 degree angle in a thin alleyway, okay, and you turn around, upogim zezeh, and you bump into each other, and you can't see each other coming. He couldn't see the woman coming from afar, back at the Kenedo, coming towards him, so that he could look the other way in a more modest way. So you've got this very interesting picture of Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel just literally going around the corner and bumping into this, you know, this woman, and then afterwards thinking, my goodness, that's worthy of a brocha, or either it's worthy to spit and to laugh and to cry, depending on your reaction. Based on this, the Rosh learns this whole idea into the rainbow and says that's exactly the point here. Look here, number 9. I'm going to do this quite quickly. This is the Beis Yosef. He says he brings B'Shem HaRosh, and Ish'al Eich Mistaklim B'Keshet, how can I stare indeed at the rainbow? B'Shashem HaBarach, when you make the bracha. Ah, doesn't it say HaMistakel B'Keshet Einet Keos? V'Heshev She'en HaMistakel G'Rayah? He says there's a difference between Mistakel, which is to stare hard, and Raya, which is just to look in an innocent way. Shamistakel motiv umudagdeg bahabato. When you mistakel means you look very carefully. Your term haroe more than if you just do a riya. The fikach asor. Histaklut is asor, riya is mutar. V'chein hu ba'orchas chaim, and he brings the orchas chaim in the name of the Rosh, and the Sefer Chasidim, which is not the regular Sefer Chasidim, but the Sefer Chasidim of Rav Moshe Cohen, the nephew of the Rosh. And he says, Sha'alti Dodi, I asked my uncle, Rebbe, my Dodi Varabi, my uncle, my master, Rabbeinu Asher, I asked him, Eich Nogshim Kol Ha'olam Be'isu Yistaklu Bekeshet, how come everyone can make such a terrible mistake by staring at the rainbow? Ana Dodi, and my uncle answered, Ki Lashon Ha'mistakel Eino Ele Keshim Abit Bekivun, Mistakel means you look very carefully, Zman Aroch, for a long time, okay? To see what it's like, what is similar. So aval, just to look, that's okay. But kena mitakel benashim, that's true when it comes to interface between men and women. Perushim abit bekavana, what asur is histaklut, meaning some kind of staring with an inappropriate maybe agenda. But riya, there's no reason why a man cannot look at a woman in a normal riya way. That doesn't involve any isur at all. It's interesting, I'm not giving a shir on this now, but when the Mishnah Berurah brings this down in the halachot of men and women and gender and mixing, etc., he indeed brings down this fact that there's no reason in halacha that a man should not look at a woman in a riya in an innocent way. He doesn't have to turn his head and face the other way, unless he wants to follow a chumrah as a derech musar of some kind. And he says maybe an Adam Chashuv should look away in that way, but it's very interesting and important that when you're in the realm of Chumrah, and Chumrah is very important, Chumrah could be even a mitzvah of Yirat Shamayim, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to be machveh in the appropriate circumstances, but that's the whole point, in the appropriate circumstances. And the Mesilas Shisharim, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, Ramchal, says that whenever you're faced with an Issur Veheter, if it's asur or mutar, then you can't rationalize and start thinking, well, maybe in this case it will be okay. No, if it's asur, it's asur. You can't do it. But if it's a chumrah, he says, if you want to take on extra, you must always weigh up, he says. There's a mishkal ha-chasidut. There is a balance of chassidut. You want to be a chassid, you want to take on chumras, you must weigh that up. What is the cost of that chumrah? Is it going to offend somebody? Is it going to be difficult for you to keep up? Is it going to cause you long-term negative outcome because you'll fail and then you'll feel bad? Meaning, whenever you're trying to take on a chumrah, there always has to be this, like, what are the ultimate consequences? You look at the long-term, and therefore, if a man indeed is choosing not to look at women for whatever reason, and maybe that is in and of itself a worthy thing in abstract, it's a chumrah and therefore has always to be weighed about on what will the effect of that kind of behavior be on the other person. Will it be offensive in some way, in which case the chumrah will be ill-advised at the very least and maybe inappropriate too. So you see here with a rainbow, the answer is look but don't stare. Just like in the case of Rabbi Akiva and the women. Interesting, Rabbi Vadi Yosef actually says, it doesn't actually say in that Gemara that he just looked and didn't say. He says he bumped into her in the alleyway, and he says maybe in that case he would have had to stare a little bit more, and therefore he bumped into her and he didn't do it on purpose. Whatever, you could look there in the tshuva. There is another related question, which is the bracha you make when you see the queen. Okay? I've never made this bracha. Maybe one day I will. I've never met the queen. She's never met me, for that matter. But you make a bracha when you see a king, a non-Jewish king, a Jewish king. Do you make the bracha when you see the queen? And I'll refer you at the top of page 3, excuse me, to this discussion in the Shailas and Tshuvas Betzela Chochma, which were about Batalev Stern. He asks, maybe you shouldn't make a bracha when you see the queen, because you're not meant to look at women, and to look to see the queen, you have to look at women. And he basically says that's not an issue at all. You not only should you make a bracha when you see the queen, but you should try and get to see the queen so that you can make a bracha, because, you know, like we saw in last week's share, remember the Kohanim used to skip over the graves to get to see a non-Jewish royalty so they could see the different, remember we talked about that last week? So he said it's good to get to see the queen. I don't know which queen exactly he's talking about. It could be any queen who qualifies for this halacha. Whether the Queen of England qualifies or doesn't qualify is a different shir. And he says at the end of the day, there isn't even a hint of a shaila here, because not only are you not staring at the queen, which you wouldn't do anyway, you're not even really looking at the queen. You're looking at the spectacle. You're taking in the whole impact of the royalty. That's what's really going on here, and therefore not a shaila. When it comes to the rainbow, the Mishnah Berurah summarizes number 12, Hamistakel Boba Yoter, Einav Kehot, El Re'ehu Umabarech. Don't stare, just look at it, and make a bracha. Now, second shaila that comes up is there an issue telling other people that there's a rainbow? People may have heard this before. People sometimes say, oh, you shouldn't tell anybody that there's a rainbow there. Where does that come from? Why would you not say, people should make a bracha? Why would you say to someone, don't look at the rainbow? Because that comes down to a very interesting medrash. Look at number 13. Vayom Elokim, Zot Ot HaBrit, quoting from Noach, like we said before, Asherani Noten Beini Ubenechem LeDorot Olam. Dorot is usually spelt with two vavs. Dalet vav resh vav tav. Amarebi yudan ledarat ktiv. It's written without any vavs. Ledorot here is written chaser twice, meaning without a vav at the beginning, without a vav at the end. Why? Prak leshnei dorot, because it excludes two dorot. There are two dorot where there is no rainbow. Ledorot shel Yechizkiyahu, the generation of Chizkiyahu Melech, and the regeneration of the men of the Great Assembly. Rabbi Chizkiya Moitzi Doron Shel Anshei Knesset Gedola. Rabbi Chizkiya says, no, the generation of the Anshei Knesset Gedola did have a rainbow, Umevi, and he includes Doron Shel Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which I think is more famous. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, maybe they didn't have a rainbow. Why would there be a generation without a rainbow? What does that mean? Why is the Gemara focused on this? Yeah, or the Medrash in this case. It seems because the rainbow is a sign, the what? That God has looked at the rainbow and said, oh, okay, I won't destroy the world. But the world was worthy on some level of at least consideration for destruction. And therefore in these two particular generations, there was no such occasion, and therefore there was no need for a rainbow, which is a positive thing. So the Gemara is now introducing an idea that maybe a rainbow is not such a great thing after all. Maybe it's a sign on a certain level that the generation is not worthy. And in fact, there's a very interesting midrash in number 14 that I discovered here, which is quite amusing in some ways. Look at this midrash in number 14. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Remember Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Yeah. He was the one that we saw before that says you make a bracha on a rainbow. There's a story of Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Shehaya Eliyahu, Sechor Latoiv, Oisek Imo B'divrei Torah. He was sitting learning Torah with Eliyahu Anovi. Good Chavrusa, if you can get him. They were learning some very difficult thing from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. But this came Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi with Bar Halacha, and he couldn't get, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was struggling. He said, I don't understand what the Halacha is here. I can't get it. Amaloi Eliyahu, Eliyahu said to him, listen, I've got an idea. Mevakesh atelish ol Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Would you like to ask Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai? Because I can arrange that. Ba, v'ani ma'amid otolach. I will come and get him to stand before you. Miyad halchu v'kara Eliyahu l'shem bar ben Yochai. And he said, fine, good idea. So Rabbi Eliyahu called Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Umiyad anota, and he immediately answered. Listen, when Eliyahu calls, you answer. Amalai, so he said to Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi balish olacha b'halacha. I have someone here who needs to speak to you. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wants to speak to you in halacha. He's not interested. So I don't want to speak to him. Amalai Eliyahu. Eliyahu said to him, no, Kedai hu Rabbi Shua ben Levi lirotcha. It is worthwhile meeting this guy. I mean, he's a big time as chacham. I would recommend meeting him. Tzadik hu. He's a tzadik. Amalai says, Rabbi Shua bar Yochai, don't tell me who's a tzadik. Ilu haya tzadik, loy haya nira keshet b'yamav. If he really was a tzadik, there would never be a rainbow in his time. So don't tell me who's a tzadik and who's not a tzadik. Shekhal Yamav, Shor B'Shem Bar Yochai, Loi Nirta HaKeshet. Very interesting. Again, the Midrash wants to play on this. By the way, the conclusion of the Midrash was actually that Yeshua ben Levi was a tzaddik and there was no rainbow in his day either. Okay, that's a whole different thing. But what seems to be the case is this is an issue. This idea of there not being a rainbow is a good thing, and there yes being a rainbow may be, on some level, a negative thing. Turn over the page. I just missed the last source, the source at the bottom of that page out. It's another very interesting Midrash on the same thing. Based on this, you see a very interesting and very recent halachic development. If you look in the Chai Odom is Rabbi Avraham Danziger, who was writing in the early 19th century. He says, "Haroi keshet oimah baruch atah Hashem lokeinu melech olam zocher abrit v'neiman b'brit zavikayim amamaroi va'asul istakel bo b'yoseh." That's straight out of the Shulchan Aruch. Make the bracha, don't stare. But look at what he writes in brackets here. Again, this is a sefer from about 170-180 years ago. About 200 years ago. Umasati b'sefer echad, and he said, I once found in a book, shmoneh lam mimeni, and I honestly don't remember, he says, where I read this. Don't forget there were a lot less printed svarim in those days. He says, I don't remember where I read this. She'ein lahagid l'chaveru she'yesh keshet, that you really shouldn't tell somebody that there's a rainbow, mitam motzi dibba, because you're spreading bad news. That's the origin of this idea, if you've heard it before, not to tell someone that there's a rainbow. It's this Chai Odom, in brackets, where he says that I read once in a book somewhere, and I honestly can't remember which book I read it in, but maybe you shouldn't tell someone that there's a rainbow because it's spreading bad news. Why can't you spread bad news? What's wrong with that? Some people in this world love to spread bad news. Okay? So, look at number 17. Gemara Pesachim. Moitzi diba, if you spread bad news, huksil. You're an idiot. You're a fool. Well, who would want to spread bad news? Rav, and another quite amusing Gemara. Rav bar Achba de Rabbi Chia u bar Achte. Rav was actually the son of Rabbi Chia's sister and Rabbi Chia's brother. Rabbi Chia had a sister and a brother who were not related at all. They were step siblings. Okay? From different families. They were not in any way related, and they happened to marry each other. It's not unknown that step-siblings, obviously they meet, and they have these blended families, and they could even marry each other. And Rav was the child of a stepbrother and stepsister, which of course, again, there's no blood relation of any, but Rabbi Chia happens to be his uncle on both sides. Okay? So, what happened here? Kisalik lahasam, Amalei, so he went to visit Rabbi Chia, and Rabbi Chia said to him, Abayukayam? How's your dad? Which is his brother. Amalei, so Rav says to him, Imakayim, don't you want to know how my mom is? So Amalei, so he says to him, okay, Imakayim, how's your mom? Which is his sister. Amalei said to him, Abayukayim, do you want to know how my dad is? I mean, what's going on here? You can't get a straight answer out of Rav. When you ask him about the dad, he says, better you should ask about my mom. And when he asks him about the mom, it's better you should ask him about my dad. Amalei l'shmaya. So Rabbi Chi immediately says to his servant, Chalot Sliman Ali, take off my shoes and get the shiva house ready. I understand what's happened here. Both of them are no longer alive. He just didn't want to say. when I asked him about this one, he said ask about that one. I asked him about that one, he said ask about this one. He didn't want to say. And by the way, that's even brought down in Shulchan Aruch, Hukki number 18. Misha meis lameis. If someone nebach loses a relative, v'loy nadala, but they don't know. Ein chova shiyomru lo. You don't have to tell them. You meet somebody, and you know they've lost a near relative. You do not have to say. Afilu ba'aviv ba'ino. Even if it's their mother or father, you don't have to be the one to tell them. V'alzeh nema moitzi diva huksil. That, and about this it says, if you spread bad news, you're a fool. You can even invite them to a wedding. Amazing, halacha. Knowing that their parent has passed away, you can even invite them to a wedding, for kol simcha or any simcha, kevin she'eino yodea, since they don't know that they're an ovel,
Wow. You
can invite them to a wedding. You should not be the one to tell them what has happened. Amazing, ad kidei kach. Mihu im shoyal alav, if they ask you, ein lo l'shakeh, you can't lie, v'loman say chayhu, that they're alive. Shinema, because it says mitzvah sheket tircha. You can't be a liar, you can't tell lies. But you can even invite them to a chasna. It says the Ramon, mikol makam bebanim zacharim, when it comes to a male child, nagul hoidia, the minhag is to tell them kideshim or kaddish. Because they'll want to say kaddish, and they'll want to know. But this idea about not spreading bad news is so entrenched, if you like, that's how it finds its way into this idea of the rainbow. And the Mishnah Berurah even brings the halacha down in number 19, the ein kedai lahagid lechaveru sheyesh keshes mitam moitzi diba. It's not the right thing to do to tell someone that there's a rainbow. The Meforashim say you can do what Rav did, and like hint, run into the room and say, what's the bracha on a rainbow now? And they'll say, oh, there's a rainbow, and out they go. By the way, you should know Rav Avadi Yosef is not interested in this. He says there is no problem telling someone that there's a rainbow. This halacha is a very recent origin. It doesn't apply here. It's actually almost like a mitzvah to say a bracha on a rainbow. Look what he says in number 20. He says, Aval mutza loy melechaveru sheyesh keses. You are certainly allowed to tell your friend that there is a rainbow. Kidei shegam chaveru yuchal levarech ala keses. So that they can also join in and make a bracha. So I'm not sure that, you know, an Ashkenazi Sephardi thing. I'm not sure. I think there are basically two views here, and
a matter of whether you're an optimist or a pessimist.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Good. And we'll get to the Hashkafa. We'll get to the Hashkafa part soon, which is very important. I brought you some physics at the bottom of the page, on page 4, so you can see exactly, you know how a rainbow works, and we'll get into this in a minute. You'll see why. A rainbow, basically, there's white light refracted through raindrops if the sun is at a certain angle, 42 degrees or less. If it's too high, you don't see the rainbow. Because the rainbow, if you like, will appear underneath the horizon, so you can't see it. But if the sun is lower, so you see more and more of the rainbow. If it's at 42 degrees, you'll see a little bit of rainbow. And as the sun is lower in the sky, you'll see more. Until if you look at a rainbow around sunrise or sunset, you'll see a full arc of a rainbow. And obviously what's happening there is the raindrop, which is circular, is refracting the light and splitting it into, because it's hitting at different angles, because of the different wavelengths of the light, and it appears to your eye as a bow, again depending on the angle of the sun, with different colors, with red on the top and violet on the bottom. Okay, red has a longer wavelength, and violet has a shorter wavelength. I think they officially scrapped indigo, as far as I'm aware. I'm not sure. I mean, when I was a kid, they taught us Richard of York gave battle in vain, which if you're not English will mean nothing to you whatsoever. But if you are English, you of course will know that's 1485, the Battle of Bosworth Field, where Richard III was killed by Henry the VII and wasted his time trying to win the battle. But that's, of course, Richard of York gave battle in vain is red, orange, etc., yellow, etc., all of the colours of the rainbow. If you look over the page, please, on page 5, you'll see a more in-depth picture there of how that works. Raindrops are circular. They don't look like raindrops look when they draw pictures of raindrops. They're actually surface tension keeps them circular pretty much, and the water and the light refracts in that way. Now, Shailin Halacha, how much of a rainbow do you need to see? So look quickly, number 21. I want to get through this quickly because I want to get to the Hashkafa as well. So the Bir Halacha asked the Shaila, what if I only see a little bit of a rainbow? Can I still make a bracha? He leaves it as a question. Rav Moshe Sternbuch says, number 22, Haroi keshes mevarech zocha bris nema bris mekayim b'maroi. The Ein Bir Halacha she'im nira chetzi gorem. If you see a full semicircle, agula, of a circle, kepshutai, in the proper way, properly, as mavarachin, as al b'mitzvah mimenu lo mavarachin, but maybe on bits of a rainbow, sometimes you don't see a full rainbow, you see depending on the light. Ulamasa lo ichriya, he didn't come to the conclusion that he didn't actually conclude this. Ulafize baroye keshes ein levarech ele b'chetzi gori nigula, agula. He wants to say that you should not make a bracha unless you mamash see a beautiful semicircular rainbow. He's worried about bracha levatola. Don't make brachas if you don't see a full crescent. Again, Rav Avadi Yosef, interestingly, even though on bracha levatola he's often very strict, on this he's actually quite lenient. Look at number 23. You can make a bracha on a rainbow even if you only see part of a rainbow. If you see like an artificial rainbow in a waterfall, or you want to get your garden sprinkler and create your own rainbows, says Orkadem, or anything like that, or maybe you don't see the rainbow itself, you can't see the rainbow because something's in the way, someone tells you there's a rainbow, or you see it through a mirror, you can't make a bracha. Aval im roya et hakeshet derech chalom. But if you see through the window, beisa or machonit, or through the window of your car, mevarech, you can make a bracha ashiyesh hefek tzuchis, even though you're looking through the glass, that's fine. So it's interesting from Rav Avadia, he says that you actually do make a bracha on a part of a rainbow as well. Again, I'm not sure exactly how we pass him on this. Maybe it's an Ashkenazi Sephardi thing. Maybe it depends on the way you view brachot. Different people want to make more brachot, less brachot, but there are different views on this. How often do you make a bracha on a rainbow? So very interesting, the Mishnah Berurah says it's not like a bracha on the sea. How often would you make a bracha on the sea in Netanya?
Once
every 30 days. So maybe you'll say rainbow as well, only once. And he says, no, it's more like thunder. How often do you make a bracha on thunder? So in that storm, while the clouds are still there, you'll make one bracha. If the sky clears and a new storm comes in, you can make another bracha. So he says that's true of a rainbow too. One bracha per rainstorm of the rainbow. Actually, interesting, other Meforshim in number 25, I brought it because it's a Shulchan, says no, it's even actually more frequent than a rainstorm. You can make a bracha on every single rainbow. As long as it's a new rainbow, even in the same storm, there's a rainbow here, there's a rainbow there, you can make a bracha on each one. So you see here various different shilas, different people have different approaches on whether to say a bracha or not. Two just final points, moonbows. What are moonbows? I've never seen one, but when the moon is full and low, and there are water droplets in the sky, the moon itself creates a moonbow. Okay, a lunar rainbow, they call them. Can you make a bracha in the middle of the night on a lunar rainbow? And the answer is yes. Number 26, the Maharsham says, Yesh levarich al keshet haniras balayla. You can make a bracha on a rainbow that appears at night. Kevin shelo chilek v'chach chazal. Chazal never made a distinction. They never said by day. They just said a bow in the sky with clouds. They never said sun. So you can make a bracha on a rainbow. What about a double, on a moonbow rather? What about a double rainbow? What about an upside down rainbow? I'm not making this up, I promise. What is a double rainbow? A double rainbow happens when you have a very unusual phenomenon when the light bounces twice within the raindrop. Not just once in and bounce and out, but in and down and out in a double way. And you actually get a higher rate. You've maybe seen a double rainbow where you have a clearer rainbow at around 42 degrees and a much fainter rainbow high around 50-something degrees. What is, yes?
I saw this a few months ago.
Yes, it happened. Beautiful. And what's interesting about a double rainbow is the colors are inverted. In the lower rainbow, red is on the top. In the upper rainbow, red is on the bottom. Look at this Sforno. The Sforno is bothered by the fact that we're going to get to this in the discussion now on Hashkofa. What's the deal with a rainbow? God makes a special sign. This is not a special sign. This is a regular thing. It happens all the time. There must have been hundreds of rainbows before Noach. What's so special about the Noach rainbow? And he says, the Noach rainbow is the double rainbow. Look at what he says in number 27. The Haithala Odbrit, Biyot HaKeshet Kfula, when the rainbow appears doubled up, Ki amnam nilu chachamim amechkal atet tam lesedet tzvei hakeshet hashinit. Because the scientists, he's saying in the 15th century, have struggled to explain, he says, why the colors are inverted on the second rainbow. Ashehu al hetech hasedet tzvei hakeshet harishona amurugalet. This is the opposite way round from the regular single rainbow. That double rainbow is the one you have to worry about. That's the sign that the world is worthy of destruction. Now maybe you understand when it says that it appeared or didn't appear in this generation. It's not talking about a regular rainbow. It's talking about a very interesting double rainbow. There is actually a Rabbi Yonatan Eibershitz. I didn't bring the whole thing. He says that no, it's not the double rainbow that's the special rainbow. It's a rainbow made of one color, a monochromatic rainbow, a rainbow of pure tcheles. Is there such a thing as a rainbow of one color? And the answer is yes, there is. There is a very rare phenomenon of a monochromatic rainbow, which is usually red, not blue, but he wants to say that is the special rainbow. And finally, what's this upside down rainbow? A bit of a physics lesson here. There's something called a circumzenithal arc, which is actually called a smile in the sky. Interestingly, they call it a smile in the sky, where there's a rainbow which actually looks like a smile that forms very, very high up in the sky. This is formed from ice crystals. The sun refracting off ice crystals. It's an upside-down rainbow that points the other way and also has inverted colors. You can look it up on Google and you can find one. Would you make a bracha on that? Probably also yes as well. All of these are fascinating halachic implications of different kinds of rainbows, double, single, upside down, right way around, single color, multicolor. You never realized there was so much to know about a rainbow. But hashkafically, this is very important as well. And I want to just bring to your attention in the last 15 minutes some very beautiful hashkafa ideas. One of the things that the Mefarshim are concerned about is, well, what is this rainbow? A new thing or an old thing? On the one hand, Hashem says, I'm giving you this sign. On the other hand, it's an established sign. And the Pirkei Avos says in the 28th, Asara dvarim nivru be'erev Shabbos bein hashmashes. 10 things were created in the beginning of the process of creation. And one of those 10 things is keshes, the rainbow. Meaning what? Meaning that the rainbow is not a new phenomenon. It is plugged into creation. So how do we understand that kind of, well, what is new at the idea of the marvel? What is happening there that wasn't happening before? So I brought you in 29 and 30 two approaches, one from the Ibn Ezra and one from the Abarbanel, that they're both struggling to work out what is new about the rainbow in the time of Noah. The Ibn Ezra wants to say that the sun got brighter after the marvel, and therefore before the marvel, it was very hard to get a rainbow because the sun was, if you like, dimmer. And after, then it was brighter. He wants to say that. The Abarbanel takes the opposite view. He wants to say that before the flood, there was a lot of moisture in the air. There was like a sort of subtropical, sort of cloudy environment. And it was very hard for the sun to break through. And that's why we ended up with this marble, because the clouds just eventually just burst down upon us and there was rain. But after the flood, he says that the cloud cover decrease. Again, a climate change. They're talking about climate change. More about that next week. But he says that the sun was able to break through because the cloud cover was less. Now, they're trying to get at understandings of how that works. But I think the one that we need to focus on more is the Ramban. Go over to page 7, please. The Ramban, which is quite famous, brings up a very important hashkafic point. He says, Hamashma, mina otazer, number 31. It sounds from this new sign, he says, Ani noten, I'm putting present tense this sign into the heavens. Shaloi a keshet ba'anam imaseh breshet, that there was no keshet before. This is a new thing. Va'ata bara Hashem chadasha, now God creates a new, la'asot keshet b'shamayim b'yom anam. A new thing. But he rejects that. Look at what he says. Va'anachnu al korcheinu ne'manim, okay, ne'emim, okay, the divrei hayavanim. We have to believe the Greeks. It's not even an option. What do the Greeks say? The Greeks say, Shemalahet HaShemesh Ba'avir Halach Yi'ah Keshet B'Tolada. Meaning, what is the rainbow? It's a natural scientific phenomenon. You could turn around and say, Greek shmeeks, why do I care about science? I'm talking about Judaism here, not science. He says, no, that's not a legitimate answer. A rainbow is a scientific phenomenon. You cannot ignore that reality. We have to believe the Greeks. Which is, again, I stress, a very interesting approach. Keep a clean mind, because you can make your own rainbow. Take take a vessel of water, lifnei shemesh, put it next to the sun, yirekem arekeshet. You can see how it works. Do experiments. Experiment at home and you'll make a rainbow. Ukashen nistakel od belashon hakatuv navinke. But if you look more carefully at the pasuk, you'll understand what's really going on. Ki amet kashni natati. Even though the Brit is new, aninoten, the rainbow is old, natati ba'anan, v'lam aninoten ba'anan. It doesn't say about the sign, the rainbow, that I'm now making it. Zot od Brit asher aninoten. But it says about the covenant which is new. Uminat kashti moreh shehaita lo keshet p'chila. You see that there was such a thing as a rainbow before. V'chein nifrash ha-katuv ha-keshet asher natati ba'anan miyom ha-briyah, the original keshet which I originally plugged into creation, tiye mina yom ha-zeh, now can take on a new meaning, v'halach from now onwards le'od brit v'eini u'beinechem, between me and you. Shekol zman she'erena as kiki brit ha-shalom v'eini u'beinechem. And this is very important because it addresses the relationship between Torah and science on a certain level. The Ramban is saying that there are scientific realities, and science tells us how they work. But Judaism, religion, whatever, tells us not how they work, but what they mean. What does this rainbow now mean to us? Rav Hirsch picks this up very beautifully in 32. It is not necessary to say that hitherto there had been no rainbows, and to attribute the rainbow to atmospheric changes that occurred following the flood. Just as God showed Abraham the star-studded sky and said to him, Koye Zarecha, just as he showed Moshe and Aaron the new moon and with the words Achodesh Azelachem consecrated an already existing celestial phenomenon as a symbol of Israel's spiritual and moral renewal. Just as the seasons of the year were already in existence when they became for Israel signs of historical remembrance, so too the rainbow might already have been a known phenomenon when God appointed it as a sign of his covenant with mankind. Accordingly, Natati can be taken literally. My bow I have long ago set in the clouds, and from now on it shall serve as a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Very interesting. Because it also, and Rav Hirsch doesn't say this, but I want to raise this, it touches on a point which is a little bit more tricky and maybe even more controversial. The flood, as it appears in the Chumash, is not the oldest flood narrative that we have. The Epic of Gilgamesh, which predates the Chumash by at least 500 years, the Chumash is dated Sinai from 1313 BCE. The Epic of Gilgamesh predates that at least 500, maybe more years. And if you read that ancient Babylonian story, you see that it tracks the story of the flood extremely closely. Very, very closely. Similar phrases, similar ideas, a rainbow appears at the end, etc. And it's one of the very interesting questions that comes up in this modern era as to how do we relate to that? How do we react to the fact that there are ancient texts which seem to say very similar things to our own Chumash many hundreds of years before our Chumash? What about the Code of Hammurabi? The Code of Hammurabi, in many cases, is very similar to things that we see in Mishpatim. Okay. So there are many, many people who talk about this. I've brought you in the footnote here, Rabbi Sachs, you can look at that, and I've brought you a reference to an article by Rabbi Wolowelski, who also talks about these things. These are very, very well discussed now. And it may be that these are actually opportunities in many ways to understand our own flood narrative much more deeply. Because actually, even though there are similarities, there are very, very specific differences. In the sense that if you take the Epic of Gilgamesh, why did the gods in that epic, why did they destroy the world? Because mankind was too noisy, too loud, too distracting, and there were too many people, and therefore in a fit of capriciousness, caprice, whatever, and for population control, the gods just said, oh, we'll get rid of this lot, we'll start again, okay? And other things in very similar terms, that's the kind of pagan perspective of the flood narrative. When we read our own, Lahavdil, our own flood narrative, it's very different. It's nothing to do with the capricious nature of the gods, where they just react in that kind of classic Greek god sense, looking down on mankind and pulling the strings in that sort of very sort of simplistic way we understand it. No, on the contrary, we have a much more ethical, moral focus where the destruction of the world is not because of the capriciousness of the gods, but because of our own aveira, of our own ethic, of our own responsibility, of our own behavior. And in that sense, and I refer you to Rabbi Sachs and to Rabbi Wolowelski and others, picking up on the Ramban, this is not what the Ramban says, but this is what I want to add to this. Just like we see science, which is within the world, which can then take on new meaning and new focus, so too maybe there is even a flood narrative in the literature of the world which can then be used for the generation of Sinai and taken in and given much more significance, much more ethical and moral and religious and Jewish spin, which is talking to the people, in other words, to say to them, this is a story you know, why? Because it happened. Because there was a flood narrative across the ancient Near East. Now you can read that story with different eyes and understand that it's not about paganism, it's about a much more fundamental Jewish ethic. This is a difficult area, I'm not pretending it isn't, but it's an area which I think one has to address and cannot ignore, and I've brought you some of those issues as well. The last three points that I want to make, I think, are very interesting ones as well. Before you turn over to page number 8, why not stare at the rainbow? So we've seen halachas about that, but what about the hashkafa? Why not stare at the rainbow? So Tosfos Rid in number 33 gives a beautiful answer on the Gemara. He says, because someone who tries to stare at the rainbow too hard and say, I want to see the distinctions between red and orange, between orange and yellow, I want to study this to understand it exactly, is making a grave error. Because just like the rainbow reflects in this sense the way that Hashem works in this world, it's ki'ilu a person is saying, I want to use science to really understand all there is to know about these questions. I want to see exact distinctions. I want to understand the way God works in the world, and I want to know it precisely. And if I don't know it exactly, then I'm going to reject it. He says, that's not how it works. You don't see the exact boundary lines between the colors of the rainbows. And you shouldn't look too hard, because if you try, then it won't help. So too, we only see a kind of blurred image of how things work in this world, and trying to look too hard at those distinctions is an exercise in futility. Interesting, Tosfos. Also, the Meiri, in number 34, I'll leave you to read this in your own time, he also says a very similar idea. He says, someone who studies the rainbow is ki'ilu saying that I want to use science to answer all the questions that I have. And he says, you have to realize that science takes you so far, but no further. Like, as I said before, it's a paraphrase, I think these are his words, more or less, Rabbi Sacks says, science takes things apart to see how they work, and religion puts things together to see what they mean. And the Meiri makes this point, he's good at these one-liners, if only I don't think, I wish I'd thought of that line, you know? But Meiri makes, the point is not a new point. The Meiri makes a point where he says that relying too much on science will actually not get you to where you need to be. There comes a point when you have to realize the science will get you to that point, and then you have to use other tools, tools of experience and religious experience and faith, whatever faith means. And in Munna, he's not suggesting a blind faith approach. He's just suggesting that science is not the answer to everything, and he works that in to the rainbow. You had a question? Correct. Scientific inquiry, and it's saying that staring too hard is putting too much focus on scientific inquiry. Not rejecting scientific inquiry, because as we saw the Ramban said, you can't ignore the Greeks. The Greeks are real. Therefore, use scientific inquiry, use historical inquiry, maybe literary inquiry, but then make sure you don't see that the world stops with that. Take the next stage which goes beyond that point. The last point I want to make here, the last two points on page 8, I think it's well known, and in our society we see this in so many areas, the rainbow is the symbol of pluralism, right? The rainbow flag, which has now been adopted by other groups in society, which I'm not getting into right now, but this is obviously not a new idea. They picked up on this idea that the rainbow reflects this idea of pluralism, in a sense that there are many ways, there are many approaches, they're all part of one life, and it refracts into many areas, into many parts. Rav Hirsch says this very beautifully, that every single human being, even though they are most distant, and he uses the image of the red and the blue, even people who are most on the, you know, on the dark, if you like, side, or the light side, they're all part of the same light, and they all come refracted from the same light of Hashem, and he says it very beautifully. Rabbi Sacks, just maybe I've quoted him a couple of times, looking number 37, he says here, the rainbow in which the white light of God is refracted into all the colors of the spectrum, the rainbow symbolized what I've called the dignity of difference, plug for his book if you want to read it, of that name. The miracle at the heart of monotheism is that unity up there creates diversity down here. And an interesting fun fact about the rainbow is no two people looking at the rainbow actually see the same rainbow. Because every single person is looking at a slightly different constellation of raindrops, And therefore, your rainbow and the person standing next to you is not actually even the same rainbow. They're not seeing the same thing. They're seeing a different angle, a different rainbow, another angle to this as well. And finally, and let's leave it with this, the Ramban's beautiful image that the inverted bow, the idea of the bow being the other way round, facing upwards rather than facing downwards, as if to say, God is telling us, I no longer wish to fire my arrows down at the earth and destroy the earth. He said it was a universal symbol of surrender in the ancient world, when the bowmen of the other side will take their bows and turn them towards themselves. That shows you, we surrender, we are not going to fire at you anymore. So too, the symbol of the bow now turned upwards towards God is saying that God's saying to us, I will no longer fire my arrows at you. Beautiful, beautiful images, and a lot to think about there. So there we have it, a brief halakhic and hashgraphic canter through the rainbow. Next week, please God, we'll take this to a different stage, which we'll talk generally about the idea of the environment. I'm not going to spend too long on that. It's a topic that some people are very into and some people are, oh, leave me alone. But I think we need to address it. Next week is Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is the time that we think a little bit about the world and the environment around us. And then I've prepared a share talking about climate change. Is it a Torah imperative or is it actually a secular religion? And we'll talk about that next week. Please, God.
Picture of two rainbows together. Except that it's not found.